This podcast is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability, criminal prosecution, and the wrath of the tall man.
Boy!
Hey, let's talk about you. The ID10T community events at ID10T.com, like Russ Stevens, a.k.a. Cool Movies Darth, who has started a podcast called 90 for Chill, which Russ says is dedicated to movies with a runtime between 74 and 99 minutes, the time frame that I feel is ideal. Russ, I could not agree with you more. That is a fantastic idea. Russ goes on to say, there are times you need a cinematic fix but don't have time for the latest Scorsese masterpiece or offering from a comic book universe. There's also times when you know you need a conclusion to prevent a binge costing you a whole night. My guests and I try to follow these guidelines as we chat up features that are definitely worth your time and are beyond easy to make time for. 90 for Chill, the podcast, can be found on all major podcast platforms at 94chill.com, and that's spelling out 90, N-I-N-E-T-Y, 4-F-O-R, chill. So there you go. Thank you so much for sharing, Russ. Really great idea for a podcast. Events at ID10T.com for everyone else.
Previously on 90 for Chill, the podcast.
Emergency power activated. Program destination Centauri 5.
Computer, what is our current location?
Navigation systems offline. Location unknown.
Look out!
Brace yourselves!
Pull up!
Get down.
Hello?
What was that?
There's someone inside the ship.
It's a shame to have to kill such a pretty little thing.
We need to get back to the ship.
Why did they follow us?
Where are they?
No!
No! Complete system failure in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Hello there.
This is Catbus Russ, and I'm just stepping in here to let you know that the movie trailer you just heard was for Dark Space. I think I will go into a review where I rip into this feature, yet fail to mention its name, or at least how the context of this Wednesday Rewind, or Rewind Wednesday, works out.
Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll.
Bring the noise.
Phase 4 Media credit. They know how to make a trailer sound exciting. I'm kind of disappointed that I got this cool sounding minute 30 clip for this feature when trying to find stuff for our main attraction this week, The Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane. Sorry, I think I keep screwing that title up, and hopefully we'll get it all straightened out when I start talking to Gregory about it. I can only find a 30-second soundbite that had any good quality to it. As for Phase 4 Media, they almost got me to look into their feature Dracula Reborn from the same studio, Still Night Movie Monsters. Thankfully, IMDb told me that was a 3.2 when it came to the user score, and if I'm not going to speak positively of a 3.7, I'll skip that 3.2. It's funny, I usually rely on Rotten Tomatoes, but I doubt they got around to this one, which was pretty much straight to DVD. It's from the people who at one time owned the rights to the Terminator franchise, I believe, and it's a film that lacks a Wikipedia page. We have 6 college students who are gonna go to the pleasure moon, I suppose, or planet, what have you, Centauri 5 for spring break, when they decide they need to get there faster and release the constrictor on the speed of the ship. I believe the term would be governor, but I'll have to ask my little brother who does all that truck driving. They end up nearly destroying the ship and crash land on a restricted planet. The reason the planet is being restricted is because the military is there annihilating these gorilla wolf-type creatures. I don't think you really ever get to see one in full profile or an entire body. I think it's just crappy CG, obviously. The director, Emmett Callanan, can't direct perspective to save his life. Definitely fails at the 180-degree rule. Despite the actors are putting more effort into it than I think anybody in the Twilight cast, it just doesn't work. I mean, one, the movie opens with a PlayStation 2 era space effects. I think there's only one set in the entire picture. Otherwise, after we get onto that planet, it's just the Canadian wilderness. I mean, the lack of permits, I suppose, makes that very attractive. Math doesn't exist in this world. Like, our ship is rapidly losing its integrity. I think it's some Scott Steiner math. And then, of course, when, you know, they're escaping at the end, the ship's hull integrity is 5% and does not change no matter how many times the military blasts it. It's just a mess of a film. I don't really want to waste too much more time on it. But in a sense, you're kind of hoping that it's Animal House meets Lost in Space, since all the actors are definitely in their early to mid-30s, it seems. Looking at the IMDb of the actress Tanya Kaye, and she's a year younger than me, so early 30s at the very least. It's got characters who are so stupid, you just want to see them die, and it's kind of disappointing that you don't get to see them die in horrific ways. And then to find out this is a TV-14 rated feature, it's just kind of an embarrassment to trashy cinema. Which is also sad, because I would say the picture quality is actually a lot better than the B-movie fare that I like. Looks shinier than one of my favorites, Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter. That's what it's got going for it. I don't even think this is fit for made for sci-fi. Let's just get away from this garbage and go to a feature that my mom even regarded as a classic, or at least she says she's heard it's a classic. She never got around to it. It's not up her alley. The Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane, starring Jodie Foster and Martin Sheen, would be your next big actor. All I can say is, if you thought Martin Sheen was creepy as the president in The Dead Zone, not the president on The West Wing, he goes and ups the creepiness. And I note that, Jodie Foster had a hell of a 1976. Bugsy Malone in a feature where every little kids are shooting each other with whipped cream and then playing dead. Freaky Friday, not too challenging, but I shouldn't say that. I mean, this movie may have set her up for that, since she's really playing an adult at the age of 14 in this feature. You know, alongside this feature, you also have Taxi Driver in the same year. So that is crazy what she went through, and I'm surprised she came out the other side in a lot of elements, especially after the John Hinckley bollocks. Gregory Carl's the one who suggested this feature to me. So he never fails to impress, honestly, with his suggestions, so I might have to look back on the movie Baby. That one just sounded a little too creepy for my taste, but I shouldn't be so judgmental. We're going to get into our conversation. I was getting a little bit on the tipsy side by the end of it. I think I failed to mention how much I appreciate Stacia Harden and how this podcast is dedicated to her and the impact she had on my life, and I hope still has on everyone else that she's touched. Promotion-wise, I better get to it. Rate and subscribe on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, of course. If you want to talk trash, do that at CatBusRust. My Twitter. It's better than arguing with conservative wackos. Except Canadian conservative wackos, especially over this entire truck protest, you can still kind of get somewhere with them, or you might not be getting there, but they're just way too polite. I don't know where us Americans missed the boat there, but I digress. As for this podcast, if you want to be on the show, send me an email to rustthebus07@gmail.com. That's RUSSTHEBUS07@gmail.com. Or get a hold of me on Twitter at CatBusRuss, at CATBUSRUSS. Just come up with a movie, a theme, a director, an actor. Just make sure it's under 100 minutes. And I think we have some podcast gold. Just a suggestion, I recently rewatched The Warrior's Way, the 2010 martial arts assassin meets Wild West movie. Jeffrey Rush is your primarily cast actor, despite the fact he's a supporting character. Korean actors are not going to get a break when it comes to billing. I found it to be really cool. Effects might not hold up, but you cut off the credits and it fits our parameters. So without any further ado, let me get to the podcast with Gregory Carl, and I hope to hear from you next week. I hope to have a good report from B-Fest. It looks like that plan is coming through. Things are looking up. Thanks for hanging around for the ride.
A little girl, a great big house, all alone, and she wants to keep it that way.
Get out of my house! Mrs. Helen, I'm warning you!
Her car's in front of the office, but no sign of her. So she never came by, huh?
No.
Jodie Foster is the little girl who lives down the lane. Next month on MGM HD.
This meeting is being recorded.
Oh, they changed the voice?
I don't know. I got a different voice on my end. It sounded like they were giving you one to inform you and a different one to let me know everything's working. But, oh, I guess it's updates, I suppose. So it's been weird with all the job hunting. I've ended up having like a day of four days of Zoom calls. I mean, yeah. So granted, I mean, a lot of them for the podcast, but damn, just, I didn't think like, why, well, can't they just put a computer screen at my retailer with my face on it and go through the motions that way? A lot safer COVID wise. Really, really suggested, they really need to make it for the cashiers at retail jobs during COVID to put us up like on a pedestal, say about 10 feet above, and then we just lower a basket to the customers, handle it Buffalo Bill style.
Then what are you going to do when the pulley breaks?
Oh, I mean, it'll be all worth it if I get the snap. And put the lotion in the effing basket. Like,
I think it'd be a lot easier if you just started throwing their items at them.
Yeah, but then there's fragileness then. So, like, I've had that before with a coworker who came out from the inventory. Yeah, I got the item for him, and it was a Funko Pop. Just threw it to me. It's like somebody who collects, you know, probably has close to 500 Funko Pops. Yeah, no, you don't toss those things around. So, but no, enough of the nonsense. We are back with Gregory Carl on 90 for Chill the podcast. This is your host, Cool Movies Darth, of course. If you're going to have to use your Alexa or your Google Home, Russ Stevens, I guess, is what you're going to call out. I guess I was the first Russ Stevens to do a podcast. I know there's a lot of Russ. Well, there's a handful of Russ Stevens. Like, I think the most famous is an English magician. So I don't know any famous Gregory Carls out there. Not to say that you're not famous, Gregory.
Oh no, I'm not famous, and I'm not aware of any other Gregory Carls, but if there were, I would make it my life's duty to hunt them down and claim their power for my own.
Yeah, now you're making me want to, like, well, it wasn't a great movie, but I think it was The One with Jet Li and Jason Statham, where I'd have to check the runtime. It shouldn't have been more than 90 minutes, where Jet Li is bouncing between dimensions to kill off the other Jet Lees and sense gain their power, and it's to the point where he's down to just one more Jet Li to kill. And since we don't know what will happen if there are no Jet Lees throughout the multiverse, they can't.
Oh yeah, he had a long string of forgettable movies there for a while, huh?
It was a weird time. Like, I think they give Jackie Chan too much credit, at least domestically. In the United States, like, oh, he was a box office star for a while. Really? He had Rush Hour and he had the Shanghai movies. Like, I know a lot of people went and saw Rumble in the Bronx. That was the first time they ever really did anything with him stateside or released one of his movies to a national audience theatrically. I mean, he was the biggest action star in the world. There was no question about that. I know he had his own little Nintendo game, even. But now Jet Li, like, okay, and he's broken big. And like he was in Lethal Weapon 4. I mean, I can't really, and I've heard some good things about Unleashed, and I know Invincible. I mean, he did some
Romeo Must Die
again, and that's another one of Delroy Lindau, who was also in The One. So I mean, he had some clout for a bit, but yeah, nothing like his Hong Kong work, like Black Mask or my favorite Master of Tai Chi, better known as Twin Dragons, I think, in the United States, which is a weird title, just since it plays, they were selling it as like Twin Dragons as him and Michelle Yao, and it's like, or Michelle Yeoh, sorry. I mean, part of me, she's actually Malaysian, so her Chinese, like, that was a big deal about Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, was some of the actors had to pretty much just speak Cantonese phonetically. So would have probably worked out better if it was actually done in English. But and there's a weird movie by director Takeshi Miike, who did Audition and Ichi the Killer. If you've seen either of those, real crazy stuff.
I've seen Ichi the Killer.
Yeah, so same director. He did a movie called Sukiyaki Western Django, which is a Japanese spaghetti Western performed in English. All Japanese cast with the exception of Quentin Tarantino.
I think I might have seen bits and pieces of that. It sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's I thought it was a fun one. I had so many people say, after watching, say, Kurosawa's Yojimbo, which has been remade in the States gosh knows how many times. We're talking, well, I guess you wouldn't call it in the States if you bring up.
Were those the movies that they based off of, those Clint Eastwood westerns? Like,
Yep. A Fistful of Dollars is directly inspired too. And then if you want to go into more modern times, you have Last Man Standing with Bruce Willis, Christopher Walken, David Patrick Kelly.
I mean, to be fair, it is kind of a classic story.
Yes, it is. The bodyguard who's playing both sides. But, you know, that's where, you know, talking about fun action movies, and that is definitely not what the little girl who lived down the lane, if I pronounce that title correctly, double checking. That's why we take notes, and that's why for this podcast, a 90-minute movie becomes a 2-hour affair for me. Yes, The Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane, starring Jodie Foster, and the next biggest name would be Martin Sheen. And I really should look up Martin Sheen's filmography, because the only thing I really can recall him being in the 70s was Apocalypse Now, which obviously he was old enough to have a heart attack. Well, hard living, but old enough to have a heart attack on that movie. Let's see, Martin Sheen, born 1940. Oh, I guess he had Badlands. I mean, he was a
Spawn.
I'm sorry?
Spawn.
Oh, yes. Well, that's the more modern stuff, but I'm saying I mean, Apocalypse Now is what he's going to be best remembered for, and The West Wing. I'm sorry, can't exclude that. Obviously, I'm just trying to see, like, you know, he had Badlands in 73, and this movie is 76, I believe. Yeah, because it was like a very weird. Jodie Foster had a weird 1976. She had Freaky Friday, and I know there was a. Oh, geez. No, I don't want to see when he played himself. Archive footage. Come on. Martin Sheen. Producer. No. Actor. Okay. As the World Turns, Route 66. They could see. Oh, he was an established TV star, actually. That's how he started. So I guess it's kind of ironic that, not ironic, fitting that Charlie Sheen is probably going to be best known for Two and a Half Men, at least the freak out. And I guess that's what, like, my first note about this movie was, all right, and we have at least one body somewhere, and we have Charlie Sheen, we have Martin Sheen acting like Charlie Sheen, which is not fair to Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen, as far as we know, is not a pedophile.
Martin Sheen?
No, I was saying, like, we start, like, this film starts with an obvious casualty somewhere, because Jodie Foster plays Rin Wilson, I think it is, who's just a 13-year-old living in what seems to be, let's just go and say, stereotypical Massachusetts, not too far away from Amity Island type stuff, I'd say, for you Jaws fans, basically. I mean, I grew up in Morton, Illinois, and these people are, like, far more stuck up in this town, in this film.
I started off my day. I ended up getting up at 3 o'clock this morning. I ended up just rewatching this movie. This is not a great movie to start your day off with, because I just the beginning of this movie makes me mad, and I'm just mad throughout the entire rest of the movie. What's up with these people? Who acts like this?
Oh, yeah. I'd say you get until we are introduced to the, which is kind of a creepy thing, and it's way too common in the 70s, the love interest to Jodie Foster. It's a, you know, and we start shaping everything out and figuring, well, what's going on. But yeah, there's hardly anybody likable. I mean, even Jodie Foster, and it's not Jodie Foster's performance. She's excellent in this. It's just, I mean,
she carries this whole movie, and she's, well, like, what, 13?
14. 14, so... 14? Yeah, as I'm saying, this
carries the whole thing.
Oh yeah, and I'm saying this is the same year that she was also in Freaky Friday, and there was another weird movie that How Did This Get Made, actually did an episode on. Just doing my best to scroll. Okay, 1976. So she's 14 when she's doing all these movies. Dang, her did a lot of TV work in 73. Okay, 75 was slow. All right, so she's got 5 credits for 1976. Echoes of a Summer, probably an inoffensive movie. Freaky Friday, Disney. I thought she was older than that one, actually. Bugsy Malone, which is a weird movie, kind of like, I think I need to watch it regardless that it was directed by Alan Parker, who did other weird movies. Like, Bugsy Malone is a gangster movie portrayed by a cast of nothing but kids, and like whipped cream is the, like, basically they're shooting whipped cream bullets at each other, and yeah, and you, like, go to IMDb for Bugsy Malone and just look at, like, I have not seen any footage of this, but yeah, you got kids with, like, Gatling guns, or, like, I would say more like wasn't a rocket launcher in Terminator 2, but the gun that
Arnold uses to get, like, oh no, we got security to get through. I don't think we can do this. We're gonna have to call this off. Move, and blows that hole into the laboratory. That kind of it's not a rock. It ends up in the end what kills the T-1000, not a explosive shells. Yeah, it wasn't really grenades, like they were shells. But yeah, I'm just seeing these kids get wasted with this gun. Of course, all you see is whipped cream hit him. The movie's a musical, Bugsy Malone. Directed by Alan Parker, who's directed, I think, Evita was probably his last famous movie. He also did the movie that I talk about. I try to introduce people to called Angel Heart, which is movie where Robert De Niro plays Louis Cipher, and he's basically taunting Mickey Rourke as a PI. We talk about it on the Michael. I tried talking to Michael Dubois about it when we did the Ready or Not podcast, since that movie's got that Satanist undertone. So real weird director. And as I say, so she did that movie, Bugsy Malone, and then her two dramas, I guess you would say, would be The Little Girl Who Lived Down the Lane and Taxi Driver. That was her 1976, five movies. And like, I mean, it's probably not an appropriate thing to say, but when you're
being heavy dramas,
yeah, when you're being stalked by a pedophile Martin Sheen character, and of course Travis Bickle, who wasn't stalking her, but decided
she was the other Taxi Driver, wasn't she?
Yes, she was. Yeah, basically Travis Bickle, played by De Niro, is trying to protect her, and of course his own demented way. Like, say, that's a pretty intense 76. That's a pretty intense 14, you know. And if those are the men you're at, the character, the people, what men are that are being introduced to you at that age, and I granted characters and such, I can understand, like, yeah, I would probably be looking for alternatives. Since
this movie definitely shows some differences in the years, because they're very like, yeah, just stay away from that guy in this movie. It would be a totally different story,
right? Well, it's a rich town, and sadly, I hope it's changed over the last 15 years since I've, you know, kind of been growing up. I guess you could say I've been an adult for 16 of my 42. I know a lot of I have a lot of friends who are in the exotic dancing business, and I've heard a lot of stories, and it's like, and I've met some of those parents, and I, you know, who a degree of complacency, like, well, that's just how it happens, and like, what, we're gonna go and throw him away? Like, yeah, you should.
I don't mean to jump like too far ahead or nothing, but I mean, it sounded like this dude like was getting away with some pretty blatant shit.
Oh yeah, so the movie is about little Rin, a 13-year-old girl whose father is a poet, living. You can definitely tell she's living on her own in the stuck-up Northeast. That's why I'm saying Massachusetts, like Kennedy bullshit. Despite the Kennedys were, well,
I think you're probably on the money, though, because they had to have been close to a coast.
Right, yes, because that plays into it. But eventually people start wondering, you know, what the hell is this girl doing? She's not showing up to school. She's very off-putting, to say the least. And you have, so we're trying to figure out what's going on with her. And the two people who've taken the most interest in her are Martin Sheen's character, who's a son of pretty much the richest woman in the town, who has been covering for him for the past God knows how many years. I mean, he would have been 36 when this film came out. So that's the mystery. She eventually befriends a cop who's of Italian descent, so he's looked down upon, and finds a lover in Mario, who's a kid who's just didn't get enough polio shots, so he's walking around with a limp the entire movie.
I love that line. Yeah, mom just forgot.
God, yeah. So many kids, so many brothers and sisters. Yeah, so she just lost track. So, of course, obviously there has to be something sinister when you have a story like this. And after the rich woman threatens to just cut off the lease, because whatever it is, the lease to the house is paid for 3 years. And, well, she's just angry because she can't get her jars for jams. And, you know, finds something in the basement that scares her, knocks over the door, falls down the stairs, gets killed. So basically, just because Jodie Foster's character doesn't know how to start a car, she's able to pull Mario in, who's the nephew of the police officer. And he's just having a ball covering this up, despite he doesn't really know what happens until Martin Sheen comes investigating. And he's a real, like, definitely one of the most hateable people you're going to see in cinema in this one. And more hateable than he was in The Dead Zone, the Stephen King adaptation, where he is essentially, if he's elected president, he is going to blow up the world. So,
just the way he forces his way into the house at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, yeah. And total power play. Like, he's doing his best for the total power plays, walking in with mud. Like, oh, it's your birthday? Oh. And spanks Jodie Foster. She freaks out. It's like, no, it's an American tradition, because they've been living abroad. We do know that Jodie Foster and her father had been living in England.
So angry watching that shit. Like, what the
smack? Yeah, no, it's just like, as I say, until things finally kind of stabilize after we kill his mother, it's a very hard movie to find anybody to relate to, because, as I say, Jodie Foster's character is essentially acting like an adult. And I don't want to, well, and as I say, we already know there's a casualty the moment the movie starts. And let's just say the casualty is her father, who is dying, we find out, is dying of an illness, who's so impressed by his daughter's maturity and determined to make sure she's free, goes and rents this house for 3 years, paid up front. He's a famous poet, so he's going to do it. And at some point, we find out that he was dying, and that he studied the coastal waters, how everything goes in and out. Basically, like, one day, gives his daughter a bottle of potassium cyanide in the event that her deadbeat mother comes into her life again, and just walks off into the sea, knowing that his body is not going to be recovered.
I love it.
I mean, yeah, it's like, there's not a lot of there's virtually no violence in this movie except to a hamster, which again makes Martin Sheen the most hateable. This is the most hateable Martin Sheen you're ever going to see. Yeah, it's like
I did miss the whole illness part though. Like I'd imagine like he was like more like the Bukowski type.
Oh, he would have that one would be drinking yourself to death essentially. Which is
they have like wine and stuff. He could have gotten drunk on wine. I missed the illness thing.
Oh yeah, no, it's all pretty much laid out. Like once the Mario character is exposed to the story, basically starts the covering up, even of the people who have died. All you can say is that Rin has only murdered one person so far. I mean, she's definitely perhaps culpable in the event of Martin Sheen's mother, but that's more of just disposing of evidence. Like if Robert Durst got off, Jodie Foster would get off on that one.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would miss that guy.
Oh, the mother. Well, the mother in this one. No, I think.
Oh, the mother. No, yeah. I was thinking Martin Sheen.
Oh, no, that's the end where we basically do. So Jodie Foster's mother, being a deadbeat, does find her. And this movie starts on October 31st, so 2 weeks prior, as the mother was trying to get back into her life. Jodie Foster prepares tea and uses the white powder her father left her to prepare it. And it's the famous, like, oh, this tea tastes like almonds. And, yeah, like, surprisingly, it doesn't sound overly painful. I guess when you watch movies like Arsenic and Old Lace, it's not that bad a way to go, if it works right. Because then, of course, you have the James Bond movie Skyfall with Javier Bardem's character, who's out for revenge against the MI6 and primarily the leader of MI6, M. And as he's in prison, he at one point, oh, do you know what happens when potassium cyanide doesn't work? And he just basically removes pretty much his entire jaw to show you what can happen.
Sweet.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm over exaggerating it a bit, but he's pulling out pretty much any kind of structure that would make his allow him to eat. And a little more.
Not the origin story of Jaws, then.
No. Nope, they didn't get around to that in the Daniel Craig movies. So because it's basically its own James Bond franchise. If anybody's interested, I don't know. I mean, it might be. We're 2 weeks down the road, but it was $12.99 as of the 26th of January 2022 on iTunes. So I finally grabbed it. Not Tomorrow. I think it's No Time to Die, in case I said Tomorrow Never Dies. That's not one really worth it. So, yeah. And I mean, this is definitely a 70s movie on top of everything. It's definitely got this, what they call New Hollywood vibe. It's very independently made. I would imagine it was, if it wasn't for the snow and everything, it could have been shot in about a month. I mean, Jodie Foster did 5 movies in 1976. So
I like how it kind of lets you fill in if some blanks too. Like it doesn't just tell you like everything. It just gives you some details and you kind of get it and you kind of fill in the blanks. I'm just kind of stuck on like how much of a piece of crap was her dad, man? Like her mom, like sure, maybe she was a deadbeat, but he just straight up walked into the ocean and left her cyanide. Like, hey, if she shows up, be a murderer.
It's not about murder. It's about defending yourself. It's not really, I mean, if anything, he's instilled, he's a great father, at least when it comes to fatherly goals. He's instilled all of
just
his.
Not being around.
Well, I mean, yeah, not being around, but when you're going to die anyhow, like, die on your own terms, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Like, well, no, he's also a poet, too. Like, he might have been overly dramatic. I mean, you've known some artsy people, I'm sure, in your life as well, and they tend to be a little, like, come on, man, chill out a little bit. It's not all that bad.
Well, when it comes to artists, at least the artistic type, I think, and I could even, one night laying in my bed stoned, everything's not too bad. Everything's not too bad, but I don't care if I wake up. Like, I mean, I said it to somebody. Some girl I was flirting with. You know, and we're just having conversation. It's like, I mean, look, I got a video game made. As far as I'm concerned, I was a member of the Cubs organization for a day. I've cock blocked Billy Corgan at a wrestling show. I mean. I really, is it gonna get better? So the artistic element, and I guess it's a good thing I haven't bred. because I can totally romanticize about this. Like, I'm one of those guys who, Hunter S. Thompson, you did what was right, blowing your brains up because you set standards for yourself. No,
metal walking into the ocean like that.
Yeah. No, you shouldn't be doing this stuff because, you know, you should consider the other people around you. But with our father figure, if he was as ill as as Jodie Foster's character suggests, he basically, like, well, I'm not going to be here. I'm definitely not going to be here for the entire 3 years we're renting this place out. So I can see it, and as I say, I haven't had any offspring, so don't worry about me doing anything crazy like that.
I mean, I've fantasized about it, don't get me wrong.
Oh, no, we've all had those moments, but, like, I'm just, and as I say, but I'll be up front. Yeah, I've got that. As a single 40 something now, it's like,
my girlfriend will leave sometimes to go to the store and she'll be gone for a while, and I start to legit worry that she's not going to come back.
Well,
be alone with kids.
Well, you know, at least we have that stereotype of leaving for a pack of smokes. I mean, it's a common joke, like, and he left for a pack of cigarettes and never came back. And I've seen that in an anime before, actually. So, it wasn't suicide or anything like that. The series is Gantz, GANTZ.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it with the big ball and the.
Yeah. Right, and you have the third or fourth episode, you have the guy who they survived the game brings a weapon with him and starts trying to, who's got a kid. And the big drama point is his wife can't nurse. And, he's just now going to take over his spot in Tokyo with that weapon. And he leaves for the game one night, I think it was, that Gantz the Ball is hosting. And, of course, he doesn't come back. And he left but he thought he was just leaving for a pack of smokes. And
I completely forgot about that.
Yeah. And then
think anyone else would ever bring that show up to me in my life. I haven't even thought of Gantz in smacking years, dude.
Well, I haven't watched it all. I mean, I did buy the complete set and I did got to get around to that. Same thing with XL Saga. There was I thought it was a weird time for anime for me because things were starting to look like more expensive. I'm more of a 90s kid. So I recently...
Did you get the original one, or there's a newer one that's a little more CGI?
No, I'd say the original. We're talking early 2000s, not the...
Okay.
Yeah, and I know they did a bunch of...
Both, but I think they're different.
Yeah, I know they did a live-action version, too, so...
No shit, there's live-action guns?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm looking that up.
Yep, so... Yeah, so... And there's a Robot Chicken sketch about the snap, Thanos' snap, which opens with Thor driving the axe into him. And what do you have to say, Thanos? You should have aimed for the head. And as he's snapping, Thor goes, no, with concussions? You don't want to, oh, no. And you see the snap happen, and like you get bits like, a father walking out the door. Look, I'm just going to the gas station. Look, baby, I'm just going to the gas station to grab some smokes. And then he flips. So yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. I would rather I'd rather know that my significant other or my father did something very dramatic, like, as I say, Hunter S. Thompson blowing his brains out with a shotgun, or walking off into the sea, then picking up a pack, going out for a pack of smokes and never coming back, which is essentially what, and I guess, essentially what Rin does with her mother. Like, I'd rather you've walked off into the sea. Why are you doing so? Why are you coming back? Did you at least bring the smokes? Like, come on. So, yeah, it's a very dark character study. Like, I'm surprised it's on Shudder, because the only blood you see is the mother after the cellar door bashes her brains in. I mean, and like the only R-rated stuff, I guess, would be the hamster side. And the really creep thing about the 70s, and this even includes The Godfather, like, and yeah, we're going to imply that you have just seen Jodie Foster nude.
Yeah, dude, I thought I was going to have to, like, smash my Xbox against the wall or something. Like, is this illegal? Like, they allowed this? What the fuck?
Well, I bring that up because you have, like, in The Godfather, I guess the... woman who played Abilonia, Michael Corleone's first wife, the Sicilian, and, you know, the love scene, they undress her. I guess she was only 16 when that occurred.
Really?
I mean, granted, that was shot in Italy, but it's still, like, that's a little weird. And then, like, you got Jodie Foster getting in the bed with somebody who's, let's just say, 3 years older, you know, maybe a 16-year-old. And, like, no, I don't think it's, like, it's weird, because the 80s did this a lot, too. It's like, yeah, we're interested in seeing high schoolers having sex with each other.
It caught me so off guard, dude. I swear to God, I'm not lying to you. I literally yelled at the TV, ah, child butt!
I mean, I don't know why, like, why you would think this would even be, like, there's, I don't know what's going on with that. And it's like, and I say, it's really twisted, like, do we really want to know about this stuff? I guess obviously there's people who do, but like, this should never have been a thing. I mean, even in the 80s, like, I remember going to Wizard World 2018, I want to say. And we went to the Tom Wilson panel. He played Biff Tannen in Back to the Future. And of course, you get one nerd by the end of the time talking about, hey, have you seen the Tom Cruise movie with, what is it? Tom Cruise, Okay. Cottontail? No, we're talking early Tom Cruise.
Legend?
No. Not okay. Let's see. It was All the Right Moves. The football movie. And like, oh, have you seen? And he was talking to this guy. This nerd comes. I saw All the Right Moves, and you get to see Leah Thompson, who plays, the mother in Back to the Future. You get to see her nude, and like, Tom Wilson plays it off great. Yeah. Oh, really? And tries to move away from that question. Funny story, I did, like, Tom Wilson was the first guy I ever drove around Peoria for the Jukebox Comedy Club, but when I was working at the Mark Twain Hotel. Yep, Tom Wilson. All right, so very cool guy, never been to Peoria. He could recall Decatur because they shot the movie The Informant there with Matt Damon, but so yeah, so we had a lot of, as they say, it's a 70s movie through and through. It's a story that, it's a film about a story that they want you to just focus on the story. And it's funny that you say, like, they don't fill in, they leave it to you to fill in a bunch of the blanks. It's like, yeah, but this is based off a novel from the screenplay is based off the writer's novel. So it's like, was this a popular novel? Which, again, I thought we got all our child shagging out of the way with Lolita, which is one of my favorite Police songs. Don't Stand So Close to Me.
Yeah, it was definitely a scene that didn't need to be there. But then I feel that way about a lot of love scenes.
Actually. Oh.
They don't actually need to be there.
Oh, I've written a blog about it. You can find it on maineventofthedead.com, where you could also inquire about my screenplay for a zombie, independent pro wrestling zombie movie. I wrote a blog basically saying, like, if you're, and granted, it's not really a love scene in the sense that, okay, she gets naked, which is the more disturbing thing about it. Like, okay, did she really need to have to get naked to go into the bed with her when you're going to fade the black? Like, that's a little creepy. Like, oh yeah, this is like, we're not throwing in a sex scene just to fill a few minutes up of the story, which is what I wrote that blog about. Like, yeah, I mean, it's cool getting to see Angelina's boobs getting fondled by Elias Koteas, best known as Casey Jones from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies and Cyborg 2. But no, you're doing that just to fill a few minutes of runtime. So it's almost more disturbing that we decide, yeah, we're going to show off, we're going to make you think we're showing you Jodie Foster naked. And we're not going to actually do anything with it. We're just doing it to show you. Like, that's definitely, you could have worked with implied nudity, what have you. I mean, that's the reason this movie's a rated R. I mean, the story's pretty dark and twisted as I'm just got it playing in the background as a visual, and Martin Sheen's about to kill a hamster. Like, it's a product of its time. But with that said, though, I think the kind of story, and I've seen a lot of movies miss the mark with it. Recently watched a Katie Holmes movie from 2002 called Abandon, which, yeah, they that one really missed the mark with Psychosis and Smart People. Let's see. Okay. Definitely. I mean, with the age of, like, it'd be an interesting movie to see be remade just because of the and brought up to a modern time, just to see how well you could pull this con off in a in the information era we're in. I mean, it really serves as more of a character study, honestly. Like, because I have met girls who are definitely like feel like they've been forced into adulthood at a real early age. Like, my best friend was a high school dropout because it was going to be too much trouble to stay in school. I mean, and her dad's crazy and her mom was a drug dealer. So, you know, fending for herself. And I've met a lot of people like this, and it's an interesting character study in that, which I think is the entire draw of the film. As I say, it takes a while to get into. Like, we gotta, oh man, we did not really, do we really have to see the cigarette go into the hamster? I agree, hamster thrown in the fire, yeah, we have to see that visual, but damn. It's a like, but it's interesting, especially now with the information age that we are in. And I was taking care of a customer today, and she was saying, oh, I remember when our social security numbers were on our driver's license. It's like, well, that had to be before 1996. But, you know, we didn't have anything that we could, it was very difficult to actually steal an identity back in that time. So, I mean, it's a, the movie thrives on not really a lot of stuff happening, honestly. Like, we gotta just make sure people think the dad is still alive.
Yeah, how stupid was that Italian cop, though? Like, he really bought that was her dad.
I don't know. I thought for at least the 70s, I thought the makeup job was good. So we're talking, Gregory's referring to the scene where the cop basically says, look, I know something's not right. And this is the only friendly adult in the entire town. But he had Jodie Foster and her lover planned it well enough that he was ready to just go and do the outfit bit. So they kind of expected it. And now the cop is just so shocked that, oh, it disproves everything I thought of.
It just has to flip questions.
I think the cop knew what was going on after, and that's the kind of an unresolved line in this movie, is that her lover doing all these things despite limping, you know, burying the bodies from the cellar, he gets pneumonia, and that when Jodie Foster finds out he's in the hospital, pretty much on the iron lung, that, you know, oh, I've heard he's been, you know, he really cares about you. He's been delirious in his sleep, saying everything. And it's like, I wouldn't be surprised if the cop's like, yeah, Mrs. Haslett was a bitch anyhow, so you know, mocked me for not being a fifth generation American, you know. So I think a lot of people are probably, it'd be interesting to see how the town was reacting, I suppose, to the banker from old woman from Gremlins who gets thrown out of her electric chair into the cold.
Yeah, I do wonder what happens after the credits.
Well, I mean,
the movie ends, what happens now?
Well, I mean, would anybody really be disappointed if Martin Sheen's character disappeared? Like, honestly, you could go so many routes with this, make it very twisted. Like, and the town is basically just nominated Jodie Foster as queen, and we'll cover up. It's a bad example for all the kids in the town, but, you know, hey, she's solving a lot of problems. So, you know, small towns.
Yeah, look at that Rent Girl down the lane did. You can at least go get a part-time job.
Right. It's, yeah. Oh, yeah. See, too much pressure on the rest of the kids. Like, I guess it's a statement on, you know, that people I don't want to say mature differently, or can be, I mean, it's a nature versus nurture argument. And basically what Rin is the product of solely nurture. And, but it, you know, it's, it states, you know, does the nature actually ever look what nature does, like look what the routine does. And would you rather your child be like Rin? Or, I mean, it's really, at least from a parenting standpoint, it would be, would you rather your child be a little adult, or do you want your child to be childish?
Oh, no, I kind of got brainwashy vibes off of her.
Well, you say, you know, but again, it's, as I say, it's not like I haven't, like, my friend, her father is nuts. I mean, he was a schizophrenic. Probably still is, I hope. I mean, I don't wish death upon anybody. Not, you know, not to say I was wishing it upon him. But, I mean, the guy's a, the guy was a Mensa member. So, I mean, he definitely had stuff to take, knowledge to take from, if he ever got it straight. And no, yeah, no,
all of those Mensa people are crazy, man. That's it. That's how you become a genius. Like, you, you lose a little to gain a little.
Well, I mean, that's, well, that's just going to further drive me nuts, because it's like, ah, come on. Okay.
This does, sanity, why not it?
I mean,
yeah, I do kind of get those vibes. Like, I almost kind of feel like maybe her dad, like, kind of brainwashed her a little bit. Because she's, she has got, like, this, like, brainwashy, like, kind of culty, like, vibe to her.
Well, she's, as I say, she's gone, it's gone full adult already. And I wouldn't say a culty, brainwashed vibe, as I say. It's just, she's been told, her, she's been, and I guess you could say, well, that's brainwashing, but she's basically been raised by him to be smart, to be independent, to rely on yourself.
To poison your mother when she come out, if she ever finds you.
Hey, I'd have to talk to
you. She left poison for her, Russ.
I'd have to talk to my mother, or maybe have her watch this movie. And I don't know. She, I don't know if she saw this movie. She would have been 20.
I think moms would dig this movie.
Okay.
I'll throw that out there. All of our moms would probably love this movie.
All right. Because my mom came from a home where I never met my, her father, because of, how big of a dick he was to the family. And so it's kind of like, well, what if, mom? Like, and believe me, it's a totally different dynamic than this. I mean, my grandma was trying to hold the family together, and I see, like, I could go and psychoanalyze my mom all day. Good woman. Who's
probably would leave you alone at 13.
Probably not, but I, in a sense, like, you see, that's just where, as I say, I could go into the psychoanalytical side. Like, she was a devoted mother, but, and she is, but, like, yeah, I'm basically, I you know, I better, like, half the time I worry about, like, oh, after the bank job, you know, the bank drama I'm going through, it's like, well, we might have a case. I got some ideas, but then it's like, all it takes is, like, a public hearing and the guy reading my blogs, and it's like, oh, you said all this, and you were pretty clear that this was who you were talking about then. Why is it different with the bank?
Funny, like, when he says it.
Yeah, it's so, yeah, but I'm just saying, it's a, I don't know. It's a, I guess the big thing about it is it's more of a, I guess it could be more interpreted as a feminist tale. and basically telling us that the child, if raised well enough, neither needs a father or a mother. And if anything, the moral of the movie is you still can't make it on your own. Because as we don't know what happens to Mario. I mean, he's, as his uncle said, the cop, you know, well, if it wasn't for the antibiotics, he'd be dead from pneumonia.
Yep.
You know, see,
no
basically
what, you still need someone to start the car, huh?
Well, that's there's those little conveniences, but you know, you just can't isolate yourself and be only on your own is the lesson that Rin learns in this movie. And too bad she's got to kill everybody who too bad that she's got to kill half the people in her life to still keep the right balance. I think the tagline of the movie is, ask Rin Wilson no questions, she'll tell you no lies. Ask questions and somebody will die.
I'm living with the Migliortis now.
Migliorti, yes.
With the Migliortis now.
So it's a, yeah, it's a incredible, like, yeah, it's a, no question it is, like, now I'm just thinking, like, I own a copy of Taxi Driver, one of those, like, oh, it's cheap right now, special edition. Yeah, I'll buy it. Never opened it. It's, and you got to be careful with that, because I once bought a copy of The Producers, the original, with Gene Wilder. And I open it up. It's supposed to be the two-disc special edition. Bought it from a $5 bin. No disc. And of course, you know, this is years after I actually made the purchase. So, currently fighting with Funimation over where's my digital code, my digital code for The Girl Who Leapt Through Time. Like, I, yeah, there's no indication that that was ever supposed to expire. Granted, I mean, I pick a lot of fights just for the sake of picking fights. I hate to say it. I don't think I'm petty. Believe me, if I was petty, oh, my former employer would burn. But in a figurative sense. But yeah, I can. Once this, as I say, it's a tough first act to get through, I think, is the big thing to take away from this movie. Like, because again, Jodie Foster is playing an adult pretty much the entire film, and it's not comforting at all. So
yeah, she's an unnerving little girl.
Yes. Really, that's something I said, like, I could see this, like, okay, she's 13 here. 1991 is 15 years later, so she'd be 28. I could see this being the story of Clarice Starling. Like,
her name was Clarice.
You know, her. Yeah, I mean, her father died, I mean, in a kind of noble sense. Like, he died because so that she may live in this movie, and her and Clarice's father died, you know, in the line of duty. So, like, I would say Rin needs Hannibal Lecter in her life.
Why, she needs to be eaten?
No, Hannibal, no, like, it's one of the finer points of Hannibal, like, in Silence of the Lambs.
Show her what to do with the bodies?
No, it's not. There's the protege element. There's the fascination element they address in the sequel to Hannibal, to Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal. No, what I'm saying is that.
Her, oh, that's what we're eating them by the intestines, right? Hannibal? The opera. He's
oh yeah, where he right where he gets a guy.
Yeah, that shit was metal, dude.
Yeah, so I'm just saying that, but the relationship between Starling and Elector, you have the like when he's escaped when he escaped after killing Charles Napier and wearing the other guy's face, Inside Out. I'm really disappointed. Like, I spent a lot of time finding the Funko Pop of Hannibal Lecter with the nightstick, and then I failed to realize, oh, there's a bloody version after he's done all the batting around. What I'm saying is, but when Lecter escapes and Starling's roommate says, is worried for her, why do you think he won't come after you? Don't ask me that. He would just consider it rude. Lecter had such a code, and it's even addressed in Hannibal, and probably better done in Red Dragon. That no, Hannibal is not going to kill somebody unless he thinks it is for the betterment of society. I mean, he'll kill in self-defense, but. He'll kill in a perceived self-defense, with the two guards and the Italian guy, you know, who tracked him down. He'll kill if it's for his own livelihood, but you know, otherwise, like, oh, the gosh, that baritone clarinet player was so awful in the Baltimore Philharmonic, and that's brought up in Red Dragon. Like, he's basically the first scene of the movie is when he's going to get captured by the Edward Norton character. It's like he's actually feeding the sponsors of the Philharmonic Orchestra in Baltimore the baritone player. So the baritone clarinet player, if baritone clarinet is a thing, Allie from Allie's Accessory Shop on Etsy, she can let me know. So I'm just saying, I can see when you're this cold and everything is basically been broken down to your own survival instinct, yeah, I could definitely see how this character definitely prepared Jodie Foster to play Clarice Starling. And I mean, never mind, again, she's done, besides having to do five movies in 1976 at the age of 14, I really hope that Jodie Foster didn't really have a lot of trauma outside of the movie business. Because, like, oh, geez.
Yeah, I really know nothing about Jodie Foster.
Well, she's been very reserved. She's never officially came out, even with two partners. Like,
yeah, good for her. It's nobody's business.
No, I grant. No, and it is good. A lot of people thought, though, for the sake of the movement, that, you know, it'd be great if you'd represent.
Smack the movement. What's the movement ever done for her? That's a problem that I have. Like, people have this idea that, like, they like Jodie Foster, like, owes a movement or a group of people or something. The reality is, she don't know anybody anything. She don't have to do shit.
Well, that's part of the idea of, and now I'm thinking about the movement, and I'm thinking of Under Siege, which there is a possibility of Seagal podcast at some point, because Under Siege, you cut the credits in the last frame, which is just another tribute to the USS Missouri. It fits 90 for chills parameters, but
man, there was a slight pause there when you said coming out. I was really hoping you would say Steven Seagal coming out is gay.
hey, Steven, you know what? This is not based on anything. I'm just saying live your truth, man. And I don't think your truth is trying to be a double agent for the United States, Belarus, and Russia. You know what? Maybe you're running from something. I mean, how can you...
That sounds like a robot chicken sketch, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, yeah, this is what the podcast is for. Like, yeah, come on. Live your truth, Steven. Never mind. I think he's friends with Frank Dukes. Frank Dukes, Bloodsport. The guy the movie is based off of, yeah. Allegedly. Which, again, I don't want to mess with Frank Dukes, because I know he can do the coin trick. And I know he can do the dim mock. So, as Joey Styles said about New Jack. Oh, so he said he's killed 4 people? Well, I'm of the opinion that you listen to everything and you just believe half of it. So Joey Styles thinks he's killed 2 people. New Jack killed 2 people. So I mean, we know he attempted a murder with a Vic Grimes, but otherwise.
Yeah, I did a podcast a while back about New Jack, and after it was done, the host said, like, yeah, I thought this subject would be funny. It turns out that it wasn't. Like, I don't know, man. I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah. I don't think it's not, like... It was never... New Jack was never... I don't know. It's, like, that's...
Well, this was a show that was supposed to be on YouTube and whatnot. And like, yeah, I thought wrestling, stabbings and wrestling would be a funnier topic. Like, yeah.
Okay, you're all right. Here's my New Jack. Well, I've got a couple New Jack stories, and I got to save at least one of them for Colt Cabana's podcast, Wrestling Anonymous. But with New Jack, I wrestled in like my first show outside of the bullshit that was Peoria Wrestling, and I'm not going to take that back. Like, I didn't start training with a real professional, I mean, with a established professional until I was 26, so I wasted 3 years. I digress, but we're doing so, but the Peoria promotion, we got conned in by a guy. Or the owner of it, Norman Calloway. I'm going to drop names here. He was Apocalypse was his name. He got conned by a guy who's Nathan White. He called himself Rick Osborne. He's the son of Bill White, who is a member of Cauliflower Alley. But I had to go and deal with a lot of his bullshit too. Like, no, you didn't have a feud with Ricky Steamboat in Puerto Rico. You jobbed to him, but come on. But this guy was able to talk him into changing the name of Tri-County Wrestling, which was a stupid name because the counties in that case would have been Mason, Peoria, and Tazewell. That's a real loose Tri-County. He went and so he basically talked Norman into you can have an alliance with the Thunder Wrestling Federation, not even have to change your letters. The Tri-County Wrestling Federation, the Thunder Wrestling Federation. The Thunder Wrestling Federation is where New Jack stabbed the guy. This happened a couple years afterwards. No, actually probably only a year and a half. But so I started wrestling November. My debut was November 2002. And then I get talked into actually making a trip down to Georgia for Thunder Wrestling Federation. Basically, the guy who ended up owning or running Next Generation Wrestling, which was the sequel, he didn't want to drive, he didn't want to ride with certain people. So, you know, hey, yeah, I want to do this. It's good experience. I wasn't working at the time. So we go down to Georgia. I get concussed in a match severely. Like, I get knocked out by a double drop kick. And then the guys thought, well, he was able to tag himself back in. He must be fine. No, I go and throw some fire, and then I just look at you, stare at planks blankly. Like, I was, yeah. So I don't want to give away too many of the details. Again, good story. But needless to say, and then also on that show, one of the other guys who rode with us got concussed because the guy called a suplex, and then instead of going backwards, he decides to just throw the guy forward.
Smack douchebag.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying he's an idiot. I'm not gonna call him a douche.
Funny. Smack douche move. He knows what a suplex is.
And the owner of Thunder Wrestling, the owner of Thunder Wrestling Federation said we didn't know how to bump. That's why we got hurt. So, yeah. So, needless to say, when I heard New Jack stabbed a guy 16 times, I thought that was justice. It happened in the Thunder Wrestling Federation, so.
No, I didn't feel bad for the guy. I mean, he tagged him how many times? I mean, he had ample warnings and stuff.
Yeah, and never, well, yeah, no, you don't, you go, unless you trust the guy, you go as soft as all hell if you think a guy has a reputation.
Yeah, no,
I've been concussed by Ian Rotten and screwed up because, oh, I got concussed. I just want to get to the back. And it's like, I powdered and just tried to get to the back. And it's like, you didn't sell for him.
He didn't give you that hepatitis, did he?
I'm sorry? Ian Rotten? Ian Rotten.
Didn't he have hepatitis and like works at Taco Bell or some shit now?
I don't know. He's still run. IWA is still running. IWA Mid-South still running. No, I know he's a diabetic, but
I thought it was one of the Rottens.
May have been Axel. I don't know. I don't have. I got Ian Rotten stories. I mean,
it was from a while back. Like that, one of them, they had a show in a barn.
Well, Ian ran all his shows out of the barn down in Southern Kentucky. No, I know that. I know the story of the barns. I mean, Punk and Hero went 90 minutes in the barn. So no, I'm from.
There was a lot of fun. Some people got sick. It was a few years ago.
Oh well, I don't know. I haven't. You see, I haven't ran into Ian in. Last time I ran into Ian was 13 years ago now. So, and no, did a tryout match for IWA because at that time Ian was always looking for buildings. So he ended up in Bellevue, Illinois, just outside Peoria, and he was doing tryout shows. And I wrestled on one. He dug the guy who, like, my opponent really should grab that notebook with his name. It wasn't really, the name wasn't really anything remarkable, but good superstar Billy Graham gimmick. Guy flew in from Toronto to do the show. I hope he flew. Well, I don't know. I hope he didn't fly. It's not that long. I mean, it's an 8-hour drive, but what have you. He came in from Canada to do a tryout match in Peoria for IWA. This isn't the IWA of CM Punk. You know, we had our match. Ian loved the gimmick on him. And then he turned to me and said, look, it wasn't bad. You didn't, what you do isn't bad. It's just, but I'm not saying it's that good. And then, I hear you got a big mouth, and like, you know, I don't have a big mouth. I have a heart. I am very harsh, but I guess it brings us back to this movie. Don't ask me, you know, don't ask me any questions. I'll tell you no lies. If you ask a question, I'm going to burn something. be it Peoria Wrestling or...
How dare that carnival goof disrespect you like that?
Oh, no. I honestly, my history at the end, I thought that was a compliment, in all honesty. Like, hey, we're to the point where, all right, you appreciate what I did. I might not, you know, I might not be somebody who's going to draw you money, but hey, you don't see money in me. I give you that, but hey, at least you know I can do it. Which
Ian Rott is a draw.
Ian wasn't on the show. Ian knows he's not a draw. I think he grew out of it by the time he actually had people like Punk, Jimmy Jacobs, Tyler Black. Once those people came through, I mean, once young talent was established, Ian's all right. But I got Ian Rotten stories, the boot, so I'm not gonna, again, who knows?
I've got Ian Rotten jokes just from watching wrestling.
He's an easy.
I don't know personally.
he doesn't do himself any favors. But I will say, if the WWE Network still has it, look for the Taipei Death Match with him and Axel Rotten.
Just saw that a while back. That's I call that one the fight over the Ferris wheel.
Fight over the Ferris wheel. I get it.
Yeah. In my head, it was booked to where that there are two carnies fighting over who
can
run the wheel.
You see, I can't really talk too much about Axel. I didn't know Axel at all. So I think I may have ran into him at one show.
I don't either. Hey, Ian Rotten, shine on, you crazy diamond.
I mean, I've met Balls, Mahoney, Tommy Dreamer.
That's a guy I would love to meet, dude. Balls Mahoney looked like he'd be a good time.
Oh, listen to The Art of Wrestling with Colt Cabana. There's plenty of Balls Mahoney stories. And Tommy Dreamer, I think, is a good guy. Little behind. He's a little too Undertaker, I think, is a problem. Like Undertaker basically saying, yeah, I don't think it's as good as it was now that people aren't. And a part of me says, yeah, I think a part of me says, like I was a, like my way to professional wrestling was I was a, you know, started with martial arts at 7. I went into amateur wrestling at 12. After realizing I wasn't going to be a computer programmer, I decided to follow my next passion, which was wrestling. And I thought to make sure I have a reputation, I fought in tough man contests in boxing. And I get there and, like, you mentioned Dan Gable, the greatest wrestler of all time. And he had the Hall of Fame, the Wrestling Hall of Fame and Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa, was named after him. You know, you say Dan Gable and people like, huh? In the locker room. And it's like, you don't, like, come on, people. You got to learn. There's, like, I do kind of like the concept of Bill Watts. I think Bill Watts is a racist piece of garbage. Outside of that, and I don't usually agree with, after Mark Madden decided to try giving Ric Flair a platform, I don't usually agree with that guy anymore. but Bill Watts had a rule in Mid-South wrestling. Like, he encouraged you to get into bar fights. His wrestlers get into bar fights, and if you lost a bar fight, you lost your job because you're not protecting the business.
Smack, yeah.
I think it took a while, but professional wrestling is an art more than it is. Well, it's an art, as in the, and it's a sport in the sense that figure skating is a sport. And when it comes down to it, the art is a little more important. It's like why martial arts, like, we have mixed martial arts is like, and we, like, we didn't want to be great at one art. We just wanted to beat some ass. Like, so.
Yeah, it was also very much a product of its time, too.
Yeah.
It's like pro wrestling right now is very much a product of now. Like,
oh, no, you're. Used to be
like, you earned talking. Like, you didn't just talk. Like, now, like, everybody gets to talk. Back in the day, you had to earn that shit. You earned that mic time.
Well, it's not an issue of earning mic time. It's an issue of, well, that's the thing. Like, I can say
for stupid characters and smack and gymnastics.
No, I don't fight. Well, my thing is with well, it's not like I didn't want to do. Well, here's the thing with wrestling. It's like I didn't know. Like when I got in there, I thought, well, I'm gonna have to brawl. I might have to learn how to dive. I wanted to be Bret Hart. And then when you're just screwing around in the ring and you figure out how to do a split-legged moonsault, like, oh, the body, like, once you realize that it's dangerous, but once you realize the body can, your body can do so much if you just put your mind to it, it, like, I, any kind of spot I'm appreciative of. I can go crazy all the time. I can appreciate crazy all the time. And the characters is what sold professional wrestling to begin with. Like, you kept it simple in the day. Gorgeous George was obnoxious and you wanted to see him get his ass beat, and he'd basically do what he could to avoid doing that. You've seen that. And it's no different than today. I think it's just, as I say, I'm disappointed that you don't have to be tough to be a professional wrestler. And that's even an insult when I say that. It's because you have to be tough. You don't have to be able to beat anybody's ass anymore. And I'm kind of disappointed about that. I mean,
Shawn Michaels couldn't. He was a world champion. He got his ass whooped.
The stories are conflicting on that one, but Peoria actually is a tough town for on wrestlers. Like, that's where we stabbed a nasty boy, man. So it's a but I don't know. I guess to wrap everything, you know, around, obviously the little girl who lived down the lane, it's, I guess, my professional, like, I guess I really respect the character because it's because of her. Like, I'm just gonna be real. I mean, you can say she's brainwashed, and I'm just like saying, well, she's, I, again, it's a story of nature versus nurture, where you don't get to see any of the nurture, and I think that's probably the disturbing thing about it. Like, she is, she's just cold, man. Yeah, she's, and it's ironic, honestly, now we've gone on that wrestling rant, and she's setting up the tea right now to take care of Martin Sheen. It's like, but it reminds me of the story of how Steve Austin got his moniker. You know, he's not afraid to say it. You know, he's, oh, my wife at the time, you know, I'm trying to think of names that are better than Ice Dagger. And I'm just sitting and she just puts some tea out and, like, says, oh, come on there. Come on, Steven. You gotta drink your tea before it becomes stone cold. Like, so that's a good way to wrap things around, I guess. I mean, this is definitely, I would say, you know, it's a 3-star movie, regardless if you're a 3 out of 4 or a 3 out of 5 guy. Maybe 3.5. It's like, Jodie Foster is excellent in it. I mean, she, as you said, she has to carry this entire movie, and it's kind of crazy when you look at that she was essentially a supporting character in Taxi Driver the same year. And even, you know, crazier that she was in Freaky Friday, which most people have seen, I think. just, you know, if anything, okay, just imagine everybody was impressed by Lindsay Lohan, I think, in Freaky Friday, the remake. So imagine an actual actress doing that role. So I guess in a sense, though, it's kind of the same because, you know, the entire body swap thing, Jodie Foster is essentially playing an adult in that movie after the swap. I don't know. I mean, it's just, like, I just look at that and I haven't looked at around her filmography. I know she did a movie with Cherry Darling from the Runaways, if I'm correct, not too long after. That's something I really, as somebody who professes himself to be a feminist, like, I really do need to do a little more research about the Runaways, the band from the late 70s. Joan Jett was probably the biggest star out of it.
Lita Ford,
yeah. She was in it. Cherry Darling, as they say. Okay, that looks a little question. Fox. Yeah, Foxes, 1980. Cherry Curry, I'm sorry, was her name. I think she was the front person of the Runaways, who would have been played by Dakota Fanning. And that's something weird about movies, honestly. And I'll just address it as this movie finishes up. You ever feel creepy about, like, seeing a child actress mature?
No, I've never actually, like, followed a child actress.
Okay, well, no, that's all right. I'm just gonna throw it out there. So, Christina Ricci, in my case, it's like I always see Wednesday Addams. So,
oh, okay. See, I wasn't counting her because I was like roughly her age.
Yeah, no, I'm only like I'm feeling all creepy about it. Like, I don't want to see Wednesday Addams in, you know, in Black Snake Moan getting all naked and shit. Like, that's Wednesday Addams. And it's like eventually I find out, oh, she's about 7 days older than me. I mean, yeah. So 1980 all things, and like,
no, you grew up with Wednesday Addams.
Yes, yes. So, no, it should be cool for me. But I'm just saying,
you're not creepy.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, like, okay, Lindsay Lohan. But when Lindsay Lohan goes nuts and everything, and it's like, it's a total spectator show. It's like, wow, I don't know. This was the girl from Freaky Friday. We shouldn't really even be sexualizing her. And granted, Freaky Friday was, you know, 98 or so. She was, you know, that puts me at least 6 years older than her. And okay, the balance of my range from how much younger I've been with and how much older is pretty wide, but still feels weird type stuff. Let's bring it up. Let's just bring it back to the Olsen twins. Like, I know in Eli Roth's Cabin Fever, there's a character who has a shirt basically stating the date they were going to turn 18. That kind of creepiness, I guess, is what I'm getting at. And never mind.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, they're all weird looking, too. I spent so long without cable or nothing. Like, I didn't get, like, Nickelodeon or nothing. So I just, like, I know what iCarly is, but I don't know what any of them look like.
You know, no, I couldn't tell you anything like that, too. All right, so it's just one of those, like, well, I'm just saying, people are like, oh, the Olsen trends are shaping up into something. Like, dude, that's... We've been watching the Olsen twins since 1987. Like, why are you like...
The closest equivalent would probably be like the Catch Me Outside girl.
All right, well, that doesn't scream Mason City, no offense.
I mean, she's the most recent person I can think of where people were counting down to... where she would be 18.
Like,
she's gonna be on OnlyFans.
Oh, geez. Okay, that's just awful that that was your immediate thought, especially since she didn't amount, she didn't do anything to begin with.
Well, I didn't subscribe to it or nothing.
No, I didn't. I didn't accuse you of that. I'm just saying, like, dude, she's just a dumb redneck.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trash.
I mean, I'm not. I don't want to even call you that.
Like, I don't like her.
But no, it's like,
I mean, she makes more money than any of us.
No, I guess in my case it'd be Farrah Abraham, the only thing I knew about Teen Mom was that, oh, and she's doing backdoor porn. Like, no, I don't think I'm gonna be watching like, that's just gonna screw up my Pornhub searches anyhow. And Farrah Abraham, no, I don't wanna watch that. Sheesh. I don't know.
Hard cut from child actresses to.
Yeah.
Missed the somewhere along the line.
Well, no, I'm just saying. I guess it's just more about that that vibe that, like, like, no, they totally set. I guess it's just like they totally sexualize a 14 year old in this movie, and it's like, like, what? You know, it's kind of like. Okay, somebody thinks like that, it's like, and we're cool with it. It's like me being somebody who thinks Marty Scurll should be booked. Like, okay, he may have, like, we don't know the true story, we don't know the exact facts about his incident with a 16-year-old when he was 30. We just know that if it wasn't rape, it was technically legal. So, but, you know, and but so, you know, until we hear all sides, we shouldn't pass judgment, but that guy can't get booked, and he was a member of the elite. Like, and one of them.
Never look at your heroes, folks.
Well, I don't know, but I'm just saying, it's like, and never mind how many stories we have about, you know, guys in college going in sleeping with high school girls. Like, we're cool with that. Like, we're cool with Luke Wilson and old school sleeping with Eliza Colfert, who was playing the boss's high school daughter. Like,
yeah, man.
Yeah, it's just a, right. I'm just,
look what we did to Britney Spears not even that long ago.
Oh, no. And that's not like, and I guess that would be the closest to me counting down. I never watched the Mickey Mouse clip, so I feel innocent, but. Not so innocent. Sorry. No, I'm just, it's like, yeah, it's just, I guess it's just very creepy, as I say, especially after, as I told you about The Godfather, and even Melanie Griffin, from, you know, best known probably for Something Wild from 1986. Like, she was in a, noir movie with Gene Hackman. I can't remember the name of it, but it's like, oh yeah, we're just gonna have Melanie Griffith. She's not 18. Yeah, she's not getting too sexual. Like,
but art.
Like, no, it's just very, like, there's just so much sleaze, and I guess if anything, that's why this movie is on Shudder, because, as I say, it's not exceptionally horrific. It's just something that's really just taboo, in all honesty.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it is kind of, kind of scary for her. I mean, she's got this crazy pedophile pervert trying to break into her house, and she's all alone.
Yeah.
Like, she can't fight him off.
Oh no!
I
get that. It's just like, why are, you know, Night Moves was the movie I was talking about with Melanie Griffin. Oh well, Melanie Griffith. Sorry, and when you know it, that movie had James Wood in it. So hey, Creeps. it's just, and this, I guess the biggest thing about this movie is that it pretty much puts it right out in front of you. This again. If anything, this is a argument for lenient statutory laws, because obviously Jodie Foster's character, regardless, she's fighting off a pervert in Martin Sheen. She is far more mature than her age lets on. She's playing an adult in this movie, and I think that's kind of creepy because it may give people, well, perverts primarily, the concept that, oh, well, some of them are as old as you think they should be. I don't know. This is just kind of inspiring me to watch Lolita just to further investigate this sick stuff. Like,
I've never actually watched it.
Well, it's based off a book by Nabokov, as they say. It's one of my favorite songs by the Police, Don't Stand So Close to Me, which is about a probably true life experience for Sting, since he was a teacher, about, you know, high school girls trying to get with him. And like, he even mentions by the, I can't recall the lyric, just like the man in the book by Nabokov. Like, he basically goes and says, yeah, I'm experiencing a Lolita situation. But that's where the term Lolita comes from, though. It's from the book. Because if you remember Amy Fisher, the Long Island Lolita, and Jody Buttafuoco, that was the 90s.
A simpler time.
Well, you know what? I'm glad we live in these times, because if we didn't, because this movie would have probably been buried, but thanks to streaming and thanks to Shudder, we get to think about this stuff again. And you know what? Regardless if it's comfortable to think about, I think shit we really should actually have to think about, because it's a fucked up world out there. Better be prepared for everything.
Well, yeah, for sure. There might not be any blood, but I mean, I think it's a very real horror.
Yes, thank you. All right, so it justifies itself to be on Shudder. Thank you, Greg. We got there. So I think we need a better, never mind the fact I spilled a bunch of cranberry juice. better get to wrapping this. Yeah. We're going to get to wrapping this one up. So anything new, anything you want to promote? I mean, I know you're on Facebook. It's not that hard to find them.
No, I got nothing really going on. I mean, if you really want to, you can check out that that podcast I mentioned earlier. I think it was Sports Balls on the Eargasm Network.
Sports Balls on Eargasm.
All wrestling. Right.
Yeah.
I think it was a toe wrestling episode.
All right. No, that's
wrestling.
All right. No, that's very cool. Definitely noting that right now. Yeah. Screw paper towels. Give me a pen and paper. Right. Earball Sports. Okay. All right. Well, as always, you can find all my movie stuff, all my writing at maineventofthedead.com. If you want to be on the podcast, because I mean, I love having Gregory on, but he can't carry this thing. Like, I can't have him on more than once a month. I mean, so if you could, if you want to be on the show, come up with a movie, a director, an actor, a theme, as long as you focus on sub 100 minute movies. If you want to take that time to watch the credits and see if it actually counts against the movie, go right ahead. I mean, again, it took research to find out that Under Siege will work for this podcast. Under Siege 2 Dark Territory would definitely work. But just send me an email, rustthebus07@gmail.com. That's RUSSTHEBUS07@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at CatBusRuss. That's at CatBusRuss. If you got anything bad to say about the podcast, send it over there. I've kind of laid off the conservative trolls. But there's times where I just need to choose violence. So otherwise, rate and subscribe on your podcast apps. 5-star reviews preferred, just to help the algorithm. But you know what? I'm an overly honest person, so I understand a 4, a 3, maybe a 2, a 1, and you're just a fucking asshole. So thanks again, Gregory, for coming back on the show, and look forward to chatting with you again.
Oh, yeah, same. Likewise, buddy.
All right. So let me hit that. Jeez, where do they put all the buttons now on Zoom?
Can I hear a wahoo?